And we're back. It's the Taylor Report. the book we're going to talk about, but we're going to talk about two things when we get David on the phone. Is he on the phone? Are you there, David?
Yes, I am.
Oh, my goodness. I'm embarrassed. I didn't know we had called you yet. You've written a great book, another one. This is Kagame's Killing Fields. I think, by the way, one of the reasons the regime of poor Kagame is unhappy with you, you have a knack for good titles and getting to the point. But I think you probably, like myself, want to talk about the type of rule that President Kagame uses, because this woman, Diane Rwigara, who wanted to challenge to be president, has now been arrested with her mother and her sister, and she's made a court appearance. If I understand rightly, she is due in court again tomorrow. This is a very urgent matter, so I know you would. This would be something that I'd say complements, makes your point of the book, Kagame's Killing Fields. Tell us about her status.
Yes, thank you, Phil. The status of Diane Rwigara is that after challenging Paul Kagame for the presidency, she was barred from doing so. And then after Kagame won election by 99%, the regime decided to lock Diane and her family up in their house, after which for about a month, no one could access them, no one knew what was going on. And now then she has the family has made two court appearances. The last one, as you rightly put it, was today. And what's shocking is that on both occasions when they appeared in court, the state was not able to state exactly what the charges are, beyond saying that Diane Rwigara, Adeline, her mother, and her sister, they have incited the population for insurrection.
Insurrection.
Against the government of Paul Kagame, which of course makes you wonder, because this is a man who says that he just won elections by 99%.
Yes.
So how do you incite, I guess these women, yes, would be inciting the 1%? I don't know.
It would be suicide if she were to, you'd say, well, go and campaign and see what happens.
Yes. So it's, that's pathetic. Really the situation now, mm-hmm, as of today.
Pardon me?
As of today, that's the situation.
That is their position.
Yes.
Yeah, and now they have not been told the charges. It's a... I've seen the pictures. By the way, go to David Himbara Twitter and look at some of the photographs. She and her mother and sister really carrying themselves with great courage and dignity in a really ugly, frightening situation. Her mother held up her Bible and said, I'm not afraid of anyone but God. It's very impressive. Given the way that this government treats people.
Actually, this family is extraordinary. The mother, the daughter. When Diane was trying to campaign, trying for the presidency, her mom was always on her side with the same Bible, mm-hmm, that Bible. And don't also forget, Phil, that... this is the family that lost the dad. Diane Rwigara's father died in a mysterious car accident 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when this same family demanded for an investigation, the government said no, but instead went ahead and demolished the hotel in Kigali. So yes. this is a family.
Their property's been taken.
Yes. So the family, as you say, really didn't fight. They're not backing down. They're not breaking up. The scenes in the court were also extraordinary, because in the court hearing, she said, "Look, tell us what are the charges. Share with the defense the file of the charges." Mm-hmm. And the state prosecutor said that he's not willing to do that, and that's why they adjourned the case again until tomorrow.
Now, is there, by the way, do I understand this could become a little awkward, because isn't her sister also an American citizen?
Yes, Anne regarded an American citizen. Hmm. Adeline and Diane, they are Belgian citizens. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know that one situation, families are always scattered all over, we all scatter, then you run here, become a refugee, get citizenship, and then go back to Rwanda and so on, Mm-hmm. So that's how over the years they have acquired a various citizenship.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Ed, give us an idea of what, your book, The Killing Fields, of course, talks about all the various crimes, like at Kibeho, which were perpetrated in the past, the attack on Tingi Tingi by the Rwandan army. This is a government that does not brook opposition, and indeed, it'll go into other countries, find people, and kill them. My memory was there was a huge prison population. Do you have any idea? I mean, there's all kinds of people out of the army, out of the clergy. For all walks of life who are in prison there, right?
If we're talking the crimes by this government, they tend to fall in three broad categories. There are those that are killed. There are those if the numbers are significant, if there are more than 10, then you go now into massacre, the category of massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And the third category then would be disappearance. So the three broad categories, if you trace them, the killing, the massacre, the targeted killing, the massacre, and disappearance. If you trace the three broad categories from 1994 up to today, or rather after 2016, where we have the record.
Mm-hmm.
This is absolutely shocking. Mm-hmm. Because really, first of all, in the categories of the mass killing, the massacres, the numbers of people that have died under this man's regime outnumber the combined deaths by all African dictators since independence. You are talking about Idi Amin, Mengistu, blah, blah, blah. If you, Taylor in Liberia, if you combine all that,
mm-hmm.
the number of is pale, because Kagame, in DRC alone, you're talking about 5 million.
Mm-hmm.
In Rwanda, remember also genocide, he has handled because he provoked it. So if you count 1 million and then you go into Kibeho massacre a year after, you now get into the number, you get like 4,000 minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So the disappearances, the number is quite massive.
Mm-hmm.
Then the targeted killings, this is now when you go to political leaders, media, people like Karegeya, people like State Senator Stronger, and all that. So, by the way, if you're writing that book, you know, you think that you know this all, but sitting down in for about 6 months, looking at this, nothing but this, it's absolutely shocking.
Yes.
And that's why you, you in a way, you kind of, in a very strange way, you come to admire the audacity of this man and his PR, because here is a man who has done all this, but he's celebrated. The man who has built Singapore of Africa, the man who has empowered women in parliament, is a parliamentary majority. The man who has brought IT in Rwanda. The man now who is a leading peacekeeper across Africa and beyond. It's absolutely incredible.
Well, he's had a little help, as you mentioned. he does. He still enjoys the embrace of Tony Blair, who had a little bit of trouble himself, but and Bill Clinton and people like that. Who apparently, I mean, they're a little, they don't want to lose him, because if they lose him, then they themselves could be vulnerable. They seem to hang together like a gang.
Yes, but I don't know if it's my wishful thinking talking here, but I think finally, more and more people are recognizing, are realizing. The true nature of this man, Kagame. I noticed, for example, that after winning by 99% in the 98 voter turnout, none of those folks were congratulated him. I think they kept quiet. I think that may be saying something.
Might be a sign of something.
Yeah, I hope I'm not reading too much into it.
Yes. Well, I should remind our listeners, too, this is David Himbara, and please go to the Twitter, David Himbara's Twitter, because all the details there, and there are other links available. People need to inform themselves. The fact is, he's advertised, the way that his game works is that he is the savior, and then he's he created an economic miracle. But there's a nagging problem with the savior story, because yourself and others, certainly many others who served in his government, Mr. Rudasingwa for one, who said, well, but you see, if he's a savior, he has to remember that by shooting down the plane, which he's accused of doing, and it seems to be a consensus, then he not only would be the savior, he'd be the instigator of the crisis that swept across Rwanda called the genocide.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see, these are some of the things that are beginning to come back, really slowly but steadily. What talk about this killing, for example, of shooting down the aircraft that marked the beginning of genocide. Well, you may recall that the two presidents who died, the president of Rwanda, who died in that crash, and the president of Burundi, who were ironically coming from signing peace agreement with Kagame Zarafiev. Well, their widows took this matter to the American court, and Kagame. Against Kagame, there's a lawsuit there. Rather than challenging it or facing it, he got the Obama administration to get him to assert an immunity for him to keep coming to the United States. And then, of course, a year later, the Congolese government, DRC government, took Paul Kagame to International Court of Justice for killing 3 million people. So Kagame denied the court jurisdiction over the case So in both cases, you see, Kagame is not arguing that he didn't do it. No. He gets his friends to save him.
Well, I always found his comments, people seem to forget, he, just as in the case of Patrick Karegeya, he almost laughed into the face of the world at the death of Karegeya and made really ominous and malevolent comments about Mr. Karegeya. He did a similar thing with the death of Habyarimana. I saw him in an interview in the about 2000, and he said, why should I care if he died? He's my enemy. I don't care. And the answer would be because war is going to break out and thousands of people are going to die. But he just rhetorically said, why should I care? Well, that Mr. Habyarimana was your partner in a Arusha Accord. The two of you are trying to have a peaceful resolution. That would be the answer of why you should care, right?
But now we see we have a smoking gun. We know that he cares despite all that rhetoric. Or at least the weight of these crimes is beginning to weigh heavily on him. What do I mean by that? Well, in the constitutional amendment that allowed him to run for a third term, that allowed him to run Rwanda for 17 more years until 2034, well, I think he showed a fear in there.
Mm-hmm.
The Article 114 reads as follows, that the president of Rwanda, after he retires, may not be prosecuted for the crimes he committed, including serious crimes and deliberate crimes, la, 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 la.
Mm-hmm.
So, here, of course, while he's in office, he has immunity. But now he has, he's now given himself impunity to keep committing crime. But more importantly, he needs an immunity after he leaves office from those same crimes. But you see, it just won't happen. Even if he puts in a crony that protects him within Rwanda, those laws don't have any bearing on international law. He'll face international law. Absolutely. There's no doubt about that.
Uh-huh.
So I think my reading of Article of the new Constitution, Article 114, I think he realizes that it's game over. He has to hang on to power or else.
Yes. They say, what is it? Uneasy rests the king as every. He, it's hard to sleep knowing that people are out there.
So Kwame Nkrumah, the African, the first independent president of Ghana, said that after he saw that his ministers were getting corrupt, he said that, look, you can buy a golden bed, but I don't know if you'll be able to sleep. Doesn't make a difference. Yes.
Yeah. Well, David Himbara, it's great talking to you. The book is Kagame's Killing Fields. I know it's available at a different book list, and it's a very good read, and I like it. I think it's full of information people need to have. I really appreciate your talking to us. Let's come back and talk in the future. We'll keep track of the case of Victoria Ingabire and of Diana Wigara and her family.
Thank you so much, Phil. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay. Talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
David Himbara. This is the Taylor Report, and I think we're almost there.